The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show.
On Relevant Radio.
The Drew Mariani Show. On Relevant Radio.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Ed Morrissey of HotAir.com, filling in for Drew today, taking your calls at 888-914-9149. It's Friday. It's the last hour of the show. It's time to talk about entertainment. We've got a whole hour to talk about this. In the next half hour, we're actually going to be talking about some specific religious-based entertainment that looks really fascinating, so stick around for Studio 316, because that looks really good. Right now, we're going to talk to my good friend Christian Toto of HollywoodandToto.com. It's a great website. It's movie reviews, it's entertainment news, it's opinion, it's got all sorts of great insight. And as well, now he has a new podcast as well. We'll talk briefly about it here at justthenews.com. It's called Right on Hollywood. And I think the first episode is dropping this week, right, Christian?
Yep, Wednesday, coming soon. I got to get my act together. Get some audio on file, right?
Yeah, you know, welcome to the life of a podcaster, my friend. Your life will never be the same.
You could have warned me, Ed. You could have warned me.
I live my life as a cautionary tale, my friend, and I'm sorry that you weren't paying attention. But no, it's great. Congratulations on the new podcast. It's going to be a great partnership, I think, there. And HollywoodandToto.com does great work there, too. I want to talk about what's coming up at the box office. But before we do that, I want to talk about something that I think is very concerning, especially for people of faith, which is the expansion of cancel culture. And there's two different events that just took place in the last day or so, last couple of days. The first is Johnny Depp talking about cancel culture, which, you know, when you've got an A-lister like Johnny Depp who has to worry about that, he said, and he was telling this film festival, if it can happen to me, it can happen to you. And I think that that's a very important point. Now, I don't know what the ins and outs are of Johnny Depp's legal issues are, but the fact that he expected to get literally canceled from that event, and he didn't. I found that interesting that he spoke up about this. And I think you're starting to hear more people say, maybe this has gone too far. Bill Maher talks about it quite a bit, in fact, on his HBO show. And so I think it's starting to become more of a bipartisan or nonpartisan issue, the fears over cancel culture.
Yeah, it comes in two forms. It comes from people who are directly impacted by it, like Johnny Depp, like Bill Maher. And then it comes to people who are just brave and able to speak their minds and say things that could get them in trouble from a pop culture point of view. So it's two interesting camps. And, you know, the Johnny Depp thing is interesting and challenging, too, because there have been lots of stories I've read about his bizarre behavior. And, of course, there are lots of accusations going back and forth between Depp and his ex-wife or ex-partner, Amber Heard, involving possible domestic abuse. So, you know, one of the things I find frustrating about the whole cancel culture discussion is if someone does something significantly wrong, then there should be consequences. And I think we're kind of mixing it up sometimes where it's maybe he or she said the wrong thing versus he or she did something that was legitimately bad. And I think that's, it gets fuzzy there, and I want to make sure that when we talk about these things that we kind of have a distinction. Like, I've even heard Harvey Weinstein being lumped into the cancel culture. No, he was a sexual predator. It's why he's in jail right now.
Right. He proved it in court. It's a great point. Yeah. I mean, there are certain people who I think are far beyond any discussions of cancel culture. If you've been convicted of a crime, and several of them, and are awaiting trial for several more of them, I don't think that the issue is really cancel culture. I think the issue is a reaction to the reality of your status and your actions. I think when we talk about cancel culture, we're talking about more about the type of shunning that takes place over point of view issues, right?
Yeah, so, these are thought crimes. Really?
Thought crimes is a great way of putting it. Yes, right out of 1984 in George Orwell. And I think that's the point that most people are looking at cancel culture, not about actions that people have done, but just about unpopular points of view. Now, some you know, people might really have very unpopular points of view, but does that alone mean that they should be shunned from society? I think we've gotten far from Voltaire's Well, at least it was supposedly from Voltaire, saying, "You know, I hate what you write, but I'll defend to the death your right to say it." We've gone a long ways away from that, and I think that's really what people are talking about with cancel culture.
Yeah, and I liken it to a comedian. Comedian goes on stage; he or she really pushes the button on a really challenging subject, and they get lots of laughs along the way, though. That, I think, is successful in that they made people laugh, and they maybe made people think and reconsider their thoughts. Conversely, you have a comedian who pushes all the buttons and is not funny and is more offensive than anything else, and then he or she will start to lose fans. Maybe they won't be as many people lining up to see him or her. That, you know, that's the public making a choice. And at the end of the day, a comedian is not a politician. They're not making rules. They're not changing the way we go about our daily lives. They're just trying to make us laugh. If they do it badly, and they keep doing it badly, and they do it in a very genuinely offensive way, then they're going to hear about it. And they'll either get better, drop those jokes that are not working, or maybe just pick another line of another profession because they're not suited to this. And I think that's the way the kind of the cultural marketplace should work. But this whole thing where you can't joke about certain things and certain topics are off limits, I'm very uncomfortable with that.
Well, and we actually have an example of this. Norm MacDonald, who was a Saturday Night Live alum, very funny guy, was, I guess you would say, fearless in his comedy. He would say anything and do anything and pretty much challenge all the shibboleths, so to speak. But, I mean, he kind of lost gigs over this. He was talking about, I think it was on The View, if I'm not mistaken, way long time ago, talking about the Clintons, and he started talking about how they had people disappeared and all this kind of stuff, and he lost work because of that. And regardless of what you think about the Clintons, I mean, really, comedy should be about whether or not you're funny, and Norm MacDonald was a funny guy. But, I mean, he really took a hit, and his comedy career never really recovered after that. He certainly made a living. He was very well respected within the comedy community. But this is a guy who actually did kind of get canceled.
Even before that, the reason why he's off Saturday Night Live was because he was telling lots of O.J. Simpson jokes. And apparently one of the head people at NBC liked O.J. Simpson. They were friends. And didn't want those jokes to continue. And Norm wouldn't stop, so they stopped him. They kicked him off the show. And he was one of the funnier parts of that era of SNL. And he was very, very wickedly funny and outrageous as the host on Saturday Night Live's A Weekend Update segment.
Yes, and they ended up bringing him back, too, as a guest host at one point, which was rather amusing and somewhat awkward. But, but I mean, so he was kind of an early cancel guy, although that's more of a, I mean, it's still a cancel culture type of thing combined up with a couple of other things, you know, the whole, you know, friends of friends sort of thing, which is very rampant in the entertainment industry anyway. But that's the type of thing that we're talking about. Now, you actually write about something that I think this is not about comedy at all. And this is really about rethinking a very controversial period in fairly recent American history, which is about Monica Lewinsky. Monica Lewinsky ending up, it's tough to say that she is a cancel culture victim, although she's talking about it as cancel culture. But it's very easy to say that maybe she was more of a scapegoat than anything else to in this Clinton scandal, and was made to be sort of not just the butt of jokes, but also sort of the master perpetrator in a relationship where she was really more abused than abuser. And I find it fascinating that after all these years that she's kind of stepping forward now to sort of take that back, take control of that narrative back and to recast it. I know you wrote about Monica Lewinsky and her discussions on cancel culture. What is your perspective on this?
Yeah, you bring up good points. The project in question is called 15 Minutes of Shame. It's a new documentary that she is, I think she seems to be on camera and or narrating it. She certainly executive produced it. It's going to be on the HBO Max in a few weeks. And it, you know, looks at, you know, the digital shaming that we've gotten all too used to, a little bit on cancel culture, how sort of anonymous people pile on other folks who may have done something, may have done nothing. So it's a fascinating story. I mean, I almost think it's too big a subject for one documentary. Yeah. But you're right. You know, the punishment did not fit the crime for her. she shouldn't have been absolutely just vilified in the way that she was for all the reasons. She, you know, she was youngish. She, you know, the power differential between her and Clinton was off the charts. But at the end of the day, she did do what she did. She did sort of pursue this romance. She didn't seem to realize the massive repercussions had this gone public, and of course it did. So, it, you know, it's another case where it's not a black plate. And again, I'm re-entering the scene on her terms. I'm glad that she has a voice again. I'm glad that the culture is not instantly mocking her all over again, because that's just way over the top. But, you know, again, it's the kind of thing where she wasn't, 14. She was in her early 20s, an adult in the White House, and she must have realized what could happen if any of this relationship went public. And I wish her well. I'm sorry that she went through everything she did. I don't think anyone deserves that. She didn't, she wasn't attacking someone physically. She was just got in a very bad relationship in the worst possible way, considering that he's a politician. But I think just sort of saying, oh, she's a cancel culture victim, I think it's too pat. I think it's much more nuanced than that.
Yeah, it's a great point. And by the way, Christian has a really good column about this at HollywoodandToto.com. So I'd encourage people to go read that at HollywoodandToto.com. We're talking to Christian Toto, who's also on Twitter as at HollywoodandToto, taking your calls at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. You know, Christian, the last thing I would just add to this is, it wasn't even so much about the relationship. I'm not sure if she really talks about this, but it was because she became really a pawn in everybody else's power games. You had a prosecutor that was trying to tie Bill Clinton to some other scandals based on Vernon Jordan getting her a job to keep her quiet, which was something that was alleged in a different scandal. And they were trying to tie that to this, and Monica Lewinsky ends up in being really a pawn of all these different power brokers. And I think that is going to be an interesting perspective when it comes out, even apart from the cancel culture aspect of it, is what it's like to live through that type of thing where you've made a very bad, a very unwise choice, and then having to live through these extreme consequences because of it. It's just, I'm sure it's going to be fascinating.
Yeah. And the one thing I've not heard from her directly over the years, and I've been really surprised by this, I don't get the sense, and if she said it already, forgive me for not getting the full story, but it feels like she's not been fully targeting Bill Clinton himself with this whole relationship. He should have known better. He should have protected her and not behaved the way he did. He should have been, yes, the adult in the conversation. And I've never gotten the sense that she really outwardly said that. And maybe she feels it and wants to keep that to herself. That's her prerogative. I can't get in her mindset. But I've been waiting for like 20 plus years for her to say that, because I think it's important. And I think she let him off the hook in that way. And I don't know whether she still has affection for him, or she just, maybe that would make her too angry. I don't know. I mean, again, no one's lived through her life, that specific situation, and I don't want to be too critical of her, but I am surprised, yep, that has not come out of her in a significant way.
That's an interesting point, too. And again, this is going to be coming up on HBO Max, so this is one of the many things, one of the many, many, many things that are coming up in terms of entertainment, and documentaries on HBO Max is certainly one of those. There's another thing on HBO Max, and I think you did, either you or one of your writers reviewed, which is Cry Macho, the new Clint Eastwood film, which is, I believe, being released both into theaters and on HBO Max. In fact, I believe it was released last weekend. And you're not, if I recall correctly, you're not terribly impressed by Cry Macho.
No, I'm not. I reviewed the film for The Federalist, so I didn't do it from my side, and I had a guest reviewer take over for that one, that title on my site, but it's not very good. It's a joy to see Clint Eastwood on the screen again. He has a screen presence that will never go away. There are some beautiful scenes here. There are some nice moments. But this is a movie chock full of plot holes. And to me, the biggest problem is there's not much tension on the screen. It's about he plays an old cowboy who has to go to Mexico to retrieve his boss's kid, who's about 13 or so. Again, long story, but why would you task a man who's 91 to do that kind of arduous mission is, you know, it's hard to explain in a movie. And then when he does meet this child, the two of them get along pretty well. And you're thinking, okay, maybe it's one of those movies where they dislike each other, they get to know each other, they respect each other for their different, you know, belief systems or any kind of situation. But it's just
like Gran Torino.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we know that Clint has it in him to tell these great stories. His last film was Richard Jewell, which was wonderful. The one before that was The Mule, which was excellent. You know, he still has it. And this script has actually been kicking around Hollywood literally for decades. And I don't know what they saw in it, and I don't know why Eastwood and his team, and I'm sure he's got a crackerjack team who works with him all the time, how they couldn't see all the flaws in the story. But, you know, I guess maybe he had an affection for this kind of tale, wanted to tell it, and here we are. But, listen, it's not a bad movie. You'll enjoy it to a certain degree. I think it's PG-13, so I don't recall anything too untoward, but just lower your expectations and just enjoy seeing Clint on the screen again, and I think you'll enjoy it from that perspective alone.
So, all right. So maybe cry macho if you're not expecting too much. That's one thing you can choose. Is there anything out there that's coming out that's come out recently or that's coming out in terms of biblical or Christian themes that is worth watching or worth waiting for? Have you seen anything like that? Because this is an industry that I think is maturing and has been producing better and better and better product in those in that genre. I haven't seen a lot lately though.
Yeah, you're going to see something pretty soon. Just two quick thoughts on that subject. One is I just spoke to the head of PureFlix, which is I guess the main streaming platform that is faith-based, family-based, and he talked about how they were acquired by Sony, I guess a year or two ago, and he talked about how they have more resources now, that they've been able to kind of stay on target with their mission, with the purpose of what they do, and he was excited to tell more stories, to tell more TV-based stories, not just films, and so I think that you may be seeing more stories there, but more importantly for now is God's Not Dead, We the People. It comes out in a week or two. I don't have the exact date, on hand. It's going to be a Fathom Events presentation, which means that it will be in theaters, but just for a few select nights. I've seen it. I don't think I'm allowed to officially review it yet, but I will say it's the kind of movie that feels very timely. It is about persecution of Christians, more specifically about homeschooling, which is obviously a huge topic right now with COVID and all the changes in the public schools and critical race theory. So I watched it with my jaw open just because it felt like it was made yesterday for all the current headlines. So be on the lookout for that.
Is Kevin Sorbo still involved in the God's Not Dead series?
You know, I don't know if I think he was in at least one of them. He's not in this film. We do have Isaiah Washington and Antonio Sabato Jr. is on the star.
Oh, wow. Okay. Two very good actors as well. So that's coming up. If you're looking for explicitly faith-based theatrical movies, and our producer Patrick is saying it's in theaters October 4th through 6th, and so that's something to keep an eye out for. We're going to be talking in the next half hour with the makers of Studio 316, which is a faith-based television programming. And so there's more to talk about in terms of faith-based programming. What else is out there, though, that is maybe a little bit more traditional that people should be looking for?
You know, it's kind of a weaker time of the year. September and January are usually can be lulls in the kind of the production stream of things. So the one movie I will kind of steer people towards just because I think the premise is so wonderful. It's called The Starling. It's with Melissa McCarthy and Chris O'Dowd. It's about a couple who suffers a pretty personal loss, and it's all about how they try to recover. There's a gentle strain of faith that's in the movie itself, and I just wish it were a better film. It's available right now on Netflix. It's a Netflix original, which got a kind of a sneak peek in theaters last weekend, and it's trying to be, obviously the story is very tragic, but it's trying to have humor woven into that tragic story. And I think that's a very challenging way to tell a tale. I think it could be done. I think humor is often a wonderful way to process really difficult times. But I think the way it goes about doing so is very unsatisfactory. It's not that funny. It's more cringy at times. So you know, if you're more forgiving and you like those particular actors and the themes intrigue you, it is on Netflix. You don't have to leave your house. So, you know, maybe give it a try. But again, lower those expectations.
It's too bad because I think Melissa McCarthy is a very likable actor on screen. And she has a pretty decent range. She can do a lot of different things. And it's too bad that that isn't a little bit more of a lift there. But you also have something, and this was actually from last year, Real Redemption. You're talking about, you talked about that. I mean, what's the anything more along those lines that, you know, the type of documentary that delves into these faith-based filmmaking issues?
You know, nothing jumps to mind, but if you haven't seen that film, it's quite good. It's quite comprehensive, and it's well assembled. And, you know, it's kind of one of those indie films that just didn't get a lot of publicity. So if you haven't seen Real Redemption, definitely give it a look if you can stream it wherever the different platforms are. Also, a quick comment about just the viewing situation right now. I've been digging into different streaming platforms that are free of charge. They are commercial-based, but the commercials that they show, it's not, you know, sometimes when you watch TV or broadcast TV, it's just like every 5 minutes is a new blast of commercials and you almost forget what you're watching. These aren't, the commercial load isn't nearly as heavy, but one that is called Tubi, T-U-B-I, and they've got a range of content. It could be horror movies, it could be more family-friendly material, but I'm just really impressed by all these different outlets that are out there. And if you have a smart device like a Roku or even a smart TV, and just do a little searching on there, you'll find a bunch of different channels where not a lot of commercials, it's free, you don't have to kind of tax your income to see them.
We're going to have to leave it at that. Christian Toto from HollywoodandToto.com. I'm Ed Morrissey, filling in for Drew. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Shevin, and I have a lot of questions.
What is a sacrament?
Are you kidding me?
What? Huh?
Darren!
That's enough.
Seems like every time I hear a new scripture reading, there's something about it I just don't understand.
Noah didn't build the Ark of the Covenant?
Nahi, naha, nahi, mahmia.
Awesome is in the Bible.
Feels like I'm spinning in circles.
Elijah and Elisha were brothers?
Not getting it. Thankfully, I got this really cool music studio, and I'm surrounded by a lot of amazing people. They help me figure things out.
Whether it's a piece of advice or a nugget of wisdom,
in the end, they help me understand how scripture applies to us today. Yes! I believe adults can teach kids, and that kids can teach adults. And this is what happens at Studio 316.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
It's 30 minutes past the hour. I'm Ed Morrissey of HotAir.com, filling in for Drew today, taking your calls at 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. That was a promo for a new series called Studio 316. And it's a great new series for kids and for adults. We're going to talk to Rob Reynolds. He's a co-founder of Crossboss Media, a new Catholic media venture. Prior to this, he started a real estate investment firm in Tampa called Avesta, which he grew to 450 employees and $1.7 billion in assets. His company was ranked as number 19 in Fortune's top 100 medium workplaces and regional finalist for EY's International Entrepreneur of the Year in 2017. Rob is also the president of the Tampa Bay chapter of Legatus. 3 years ago, he left Avesta to start Crossboss Media. Their new show coming out now is Studio 316 that stars his co-founder and Franciscan University classmate, Shevin McCullough. You can find them online at studio316.com. Rob, welcome to the show. Great to talk to you today.
Hey, thank you, Ed. Thanks for having me.
So, it's quite a shift going from the a high-powered real estate firm that's got $1.7 billion in assets. I mean, first off, congratulations on your success there. But it's quite a shift to turn around, you know, and jump into the entertainment industry, especially faith-based, Catholic-based entertainment, which is not necessarily a market that is the first choice for people, but probably should be.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, no. Thanks for that. I think it comes down to my compass, which is ultimately, I want to I want to be in heaven for eternity with my Lord, with my family, with as many people as I can help get there as possible, you know? So that governing me, you know, it kind of leaves some freedom for responding to a call. And that definitely came clearly in 2018, but, you know, leading up to it, I was a teacher for 7 years in New York, and then, you know, concurrently I was doing real estate for 6 of those years, and started a company with my brother that you'd mentioned already, Avesta. And I'm a very mission-based person, and I want to serve the Lord with my life. So,
well, it's good too, because, you know, you've got that sense of direction. And I mean, let's face it, you have a lot of gifts. You've got the resources and you've got the gifts at your disposal. I think it's really great to see you putting them into use in that mission. That's not I don't want to say it never happens, because that's certainly not true, but it's not normally what people would do in that position. Did you get anybody asking you, you know, about whether or not that this is really what you wanted to do? How much blowback did you get when you started saying, you know, this is the direction I really want to take this in?
Sure. Yeah. No, there were a good number of people saying, are you losing your mind here? You know, fortunately, my wife and my brother were not among them. You know, my wife, Mari, was very supportive, and as was my brother, Peter. So, who was my partner in business, and he, you know, it basically, so, you know, to add to that, Ed, I have 7 kids. Six of those were, you know, at the time, and then we just recently had a son, but all daughters, and I was a public school teacher for years too. So I saw the harm that social media has, you know, and media in general, right? So
right.
I saw the impact that it has, particularly on girls from my vantage point. And I have 6 of them, and, you know, I'm thinking, man, you know, there's a real problem here. And, you know, I'm going to stop complaining about it. I'm going to do something about it. So, you know, in 2018, to give you a little context, I was on a silent retreat in the beginning of 2018, and just felt called for years to actually go on a extended silent retreat. So I did. And, you know, on that retreat, I was reading, you know, Luke chapter 5, where, you know, the calling of Simon, where, you know, he goes, casts his net and pulls up a bunch of fish. And, you know, Jesus basically ends with, you know, do not be afraid, drop your net and come catch men. And it just hit me directly, like, through, you know, between the eyes and the heart. And, you know, and I was in adoration, just had a just profound encounter with Christ. And it was very clear. And it came, you know, I had no plans on leaving real estate. I found a lot of fulfillment there. I saw, you know, there was mission there too, in serving people,
right,
through
of course,
providing homes. And it just, it was clear, and it came with peace and joy, you know, which is, I think, keys to discernment, you know, and
very much engaging keys to discernment. Yes,
that's right. That's right. So yeah, I didn't, you know, it was there that I just knew I immediately had to pursue whatever this was, this, you know, call to drop my nets and catch men, you know. And I didn't know what that meant, but I knew what I had, right? I knew I had been a teacher. I have kids. I know that the harm that there is in media. And, you know, after a few months, it started to crystallize. So,
well, and I think it's interesting too. I mean, obviously, if you've got 6 girls, and I agree with you. I mean, I think that the media and the social media environment is toxic for children, period. But I think I think that there is a heightened risk in both for girls and young women. Just on the basis of, first off, they're targeted more for attention and exploitation, and also they're more vulnerable to it, I think, and for various reasons. I mean, maybe I'm not sure if you agree with me on that point or not, but I mean, that is it's always been concerning to me. I have two granddaughters. That part has always been concerning to me. And and I think that the issue for most parents is that there really isn't an alternative to that. And I'm wondering how much that played in for you. I'm sure that, you know, you're a good parent. You're a good dad. You're probably trying to find ways to redirect your, you know, both your son and your daughters. How was that working prior to you doing CrossBoss Media?
Yeah. So, you know, first off, the existence of harmful media is, I mean, that's just, it's so clear and present, right? So that's out there. My, you know, finding wholesome entertainment for kids is a huge challenge. And,
right,
you know, my wife at home, she wants to have an outlet for kids, for our kids as well, to be edified, to be educated, entertained, to reinforce what, you know, the values, the virtues that we're raising them with. And, you know, she's expressed challenges doing so. I mean, it's clear in general, right? But she plays an active role in navigating through this and surfing and seeing and just, you know, and she's, we all have this rudimentary desire to protect our kids, you know, to,
right,
exactly, not just physically by not making sure they don't cross the road or, you know, run into traffic, but I mean, morally, I mean, even more so, I mean, we want holiness for our kids and we want to be good parents. And, you know, this is, harmful media is it's a villain against that. And, you know, you shouldn't have to worry about your children watching content made for kids, you know? So yeah, we have kids of our own. We want what's best for them. And yeah, we feel the pain of people trying to find an outlet like that.
You know, I think and again, we're speaking with Rob Reynolds from Studio 316. We're going to talk about this new show. CrossBoss Media is the his production company, and we're going to get more into that as well. But I think, you know, we see, you know, there's all sorts of different children's programming, you know, channels, if you will. And some of it's fine. Some of it, there's no problem with, but some of it is really didactic. It is directing in a cultural or a political manner. And we've always had some of that, you know, there's always been a little bit of that, or at least from when I was a kid, there was always a little bit of that, but it seems like there's a lot more of that these days. And it's not surprising to me that you and your wife were having trouble finding appropriate entertainment for your children. And children need to be entertained. I mean, adults need to be entertained. You can't just say, well, you don't watch TV, don't read books. Human beings aren't made that way. We're made to have joy. We're made to be, to entertain each other, entertain ourselves maybe. But this is something that can be used for good. If nothing else, just to bring joy. But I'm curious how frustrated you got looking for that in all the channels that are provided, you know, 500 channels and nothing's on, sort of thing.
Yeah, you know, that's me being, you know, occupied on the work side of things, you know, in real estate, I wouldn't spend as much time scouring that, but whereas my wife would. And, but then after I started this endeavor, for sure, I mean, I was digging in deep and really looking and searching. And frankly, I wanted to find a lot of great stuff. You know, I kind of wanted to be proven wrong and find out, you know what, we just didn't look hard enough. And maybe we can provide a resource of what's already out there and kind of give people a go to that. But man, were the picking sin. It was unbelievable. So, but to fast forward, to even add to what you were saying, Ed, not only, you know, there's clearly subversive content, right?
Right.
Then there's, you know, there's good content, but then there's also this hybrid of traditionally good content that now is, you're kind of scratching your head, like, what the heck's going on here? For instance, Blue's Clues, you know, targeting 3 to 5 year old age range, just recently, and at the end of May, had, you know, this episode on the Pride Parade, and it was focusing on transgender and
wow,
you know, bis and all this, you know, bit. I just couldn't. I was like, I don't understand why you're feeding this to children. Why are you trying to, you know, confuse children at such a young age? Like, sexuality is just not even something that kids are thinking about at 3 to 5 years old. I mean, come on. So that's not, I mean, you could search that right on the web, and I mean, it's right there. You pull it up and it's this catchy tune, and it goes through, you know, all of this, and it just scratches your head. So Cinderella, this new Cinderella that comes out from Amazon, that,
yes,
I mean, they pump so much advertisement for it, and you watch the trailer, and the fairy godmother is a man, and he literally says he's the fairy godmother, and that's his role in the show, and you're like, what are you doing? You know, if gender confusion, I mean, why are we trying to confuse people so much about this? I don't understand it. So these are traditional good shows that are now using this, and then they're taking these messages and putting them in a story that we're very familiar with, right?
So. Right. It's almost like a hollowing out of something traditional in order for, again, the didactic to prevail. And when you go through these things with Blue's Clues, and which I hadn't heard before, which is very sad, but the Cinderella thing, which I not only had heard, but I've read about, and all of the different, you know, social justice messages that went into this thing, it becomes very clear that while this is supposedly, you know, children's programming, it's really adults programming, right? The purposes of this programming isn't to entertain children. It isn't to bring joy to children. It's for the adults to lecture to children. It's to make the adults feel better, not the kids. And I think that's the exploitation. That's the environment of exploitation, of course, that you saw, you and your wife especially saw in this industry. Not to say that the whole entire children's entertainment industry is like that, because it's not, but there's an awful lot of it out there.
Yes, and no, it's certainly not all of it. But yeah, no, you can't possibly say that you have the children at the forefront of your focus in cases like this. I can't really add to what you're saying. You're spot on. And yeah, I mean, you know, this is part of what inspired me to go down this path in particular. And, you know, one day I'm working on my laptop, and my kids were on watching PBS, and Mr. Rogers popped up, and this is back in 2018, probably months after I felt this call, and I'd left my real estate company, and I was really pursuing and discerning and trying to figure out where exactly I'm going. Mr. Rogers comes on, and my wife says, oh my gosh, Chevin could totally do that, you know. And Chevin, who was mentioned earlier in the show, he's my partner in this. He was
a yep.
good friend from college and at Franciscan University. And he was just, you know, he's just like the life of the party type, just loud, outgoing, funny, just gregarious. And he's just a high-spirited guy. And he had, you know, conversion years back. And he's very musical. Writes music, produces music, all that, and he's like the kid whisperer, you know. So my wife starts listening to all this stuff, and he's great in front of a camera, and I'm like, whoa, you know. And all of a sudden, it's like it starts really becoming clear, you know. And yeah, he jumped on board a few months later, and we just really started kind of learn everything we could about production.
Rob,
you know, the film industry. Yeah.
We need to take a quick break, yeah. Rob. But when we come back with Rob Reynolds, we're going to talk about Studio 316, because it's a really delightful premise, and we want to talk more about that show. I'm Ed Morrissey, filling in for Drew. We'll be right back.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
Your daily dose of faith, hope, and charity. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
It's 49 minutes past the hour. I'm Ed Morrissey of HotAir.com, filling in for Drew, taking your calls at 888-914-9149. Don't forget to stay tuned for the Cale Clark Show coming up at the top of the hour. Cale's topic today, the 6 lies that Satan whispers in your ear. You don't want to miss that. 5 o'clock Central Time, right after the end of this show, Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. And we are speaking with Rob Reynolds, the co-founder of Crossboss Media, a new Catholic media venture, and their new show, Studio 316, which you can find at studio316.com. And this is a fun-sounding show. Imagine a Holy Spirit-filled Fresh Prince of Bel-Air takes over Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, inspiring kids to imitate Christ. The show takes place in Music Studio 316, run by the star and hero of the show, Chevin, a good-natured yet misguided recording artist whose task is to create and release a song to explain the Sunday gospel passage. The problem is he often doesn't understand it or agree with the passage, and he can't complete the song until he does. That's when the kids come in to help Chevin understand what the gospel message is. I just love this setup. I think it's really delightful.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, it's amazing. We in creating this show, we really dug in on film production, on filmmaking, on storytelling, screenwriting, all of that. And you know, the classic movies take, Ed, they just take, I mean, so many different movies you watch and they follow the same story arc. You know, it's this hero's journey. You know, just think of the obvious ones like Luke Skywalker, Frodo, you know, they're kind of these weak people to start, sheepish, whatever. And then, you know, by the end, they save the world, you know, and that's the hero's journey. And they're always helped by a guide, you know, and these guides, you know, Yoda, Obi-Wan Kenobi, or, you know, Gandalf, you think that they're the ones that are supposed to save the world, right? But no, it's the person who has this journey, this hero's journey, this discovery. And they're so powerful. That storytelling is so powerful because we all identify with that. You know, it gives us all hope. Like, yeah, I'm that person. We all know our weaknesses.
Right.
And, you know, those characters give us hope that, yeah, we can do something great. And we followed that storytelling path with Chevin. You know, he doesn't understand the gospel passage, and that, you know, these are things that we all can relate to, you know, like,
yes.
I didn't get that either. I don't understand that. Or I disagreed with that. Or how's Jesus going to tell us we have to do that? Well, he has these objections, and through the course of the episode, he can't write his song until he does. And that's his job. He has to, you know, record a song that relates the gospel to today, and that he can't do it until he understands. So it takes the course of the episode and these unsuspecting collaborators to help them out. And then we always finish with a song that's based on that gospel passage, which is typically the gospel of the upcoming Sunday. So the one we released this week is for this coming Sunday. And yeah, so it's a catchy tune. You know, we make the beats in house. We write the lyrics, we do all of that stuff. And yeah, it's been fun. And we have, you know, a few Hollywood-based people that are on the project too, that commute here to Tampa to do it. So our director screenwriter is Hollywood-based, so is our cinematographer. Wow. And another co-writer. So,
well, I think another fascinating aspect of this too. I'm sorry, Rob. Again, we're speaking with Rob Reynolds from Studio316.com and Crossboss Media, which is the production company for Studio 316, the show. I think one of the other fascinating aspects about this is you have kids involved in the writing of the show and in processing the message in order to make sure that it's something that is engaging for kids. And I'm curious as to how you landed on that process in this case.
Yeah, that's funny. No, great question. So what you're referring to, it's a writer. We call it the Writers Guild. And, you know, there's eight kids in it. Between 12 and 18 years old. Now, our target audience is 7 to 12-year-olds. So, like, kind of that preteen you know, middle graders is what they're called. And but we have 12 to 18 year old group, and there's eight of them, and they have to apply, and we interview and we select eight each month, and they spend, you know, a total of 12 hours with us in 2 weeks, and they go over our scripts, and we have three scripts a month that we do, and these kids just hammer our scripts, and we do major revisions, you know, and whether it's colloquial stuff that you and I might know, they'll be like, "What does that mean?" We're like, "What? You don't know what that means?" And they'll change it into their lingo. If something they don't think's funny that we thought was hilarious, they're like, "That's not funny." You're like, "Oh man!" But you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if I love it or not. It matters if our audience does, as long as truth is kept in there, you know. And yeah, we just in reading enough and listening and watching different things and hearing lectures, it's important to always have a writer's room for these shows to you know, come up with ideas. And that's kind of what evolved from that, was like, man, we should have kids involved in this.
You know, I'm not sure that I've ever heard anybody doing that before. And I don't know that they haven't, but I've never heard of it before. And I'm just curious as to how you got inspired to do that.
It's the kids part I have not heard of either, but you know, there it's common to, you know, for shows,
oh,
for
sure,
movies,
yeah,
to have a writer's room of, you know, they could have up to 10 different people in there, and they're spitballing ideas, and you know, an idea that I threw out, they're like, "No, I don't like that," but one person's like, "Yeah, but this one aspect," and then all of a sudden you have a plot and a story, and then you have, you know, revisions that are made through different cycles. And that's kind of, you know, and then I was like, well, we're doing it towards this audience. Let's get kids that have lived through it very recently. So, or are still in it. And, so that's kind of where it came from, you know, and I didn't spend much time beyond that. We just thought it might work. So we tested it, and has it been helpful for us?
I bet it's fun too to work with the kids on this material.
It's
probably
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah,
it's a lot of fun, and that's, you know, years of teaching experience have come in handy.
Indeed.
To keep it reined in and so on.
So again, we're talking with Rob Reynolds from CrossBoss Media, and Studio 316 is the show. Studio316.com is the website for the show. Where do people watch this? Do they just watch it off the website? Is it available through other streaming channels?
Sure. No. Yeah. Right. It's on our website. So part of our mission is we wanted to have, you know, a secure place to encounter Christ in a
great
way that
point.
Inspires action. And so on our website, we don't have external advertisement or anything like that. And so yeah, everything we produce, you go to our website, studio316.com, so studio316.com, and that's, you can watch it from there. You can project it on the TV. There's an app in the works, but you know, that's all coming out soon. But
excellent.
Right now, the website right now we have 7 episodes out, Ed, with another 10 coming in through December, and then we're starting production next week for season 2. So season 1 is 18 episodes, and then we're going into production for season 2.
Oh, that's great.
So
that's terrific,
yeah.
News. We got about 30 seconds left. Any other shows on the horizon for CrossBoss Media?
You know, I think the Gospel Writers Ministry, of course, the Holy Spirit primarily, have done a good job keeping us occupied with that. I mean,
I
can tell you what episodes are coming out, you know, in January of 2026 because of because we already know what gospels are going to be read on Sunday, right? So,
right.
But I would say, you know, my challenge to the listening audience is watch a few episodes. You know, get into the operating rhythm of the show, the music at the end. And, you know, it's like The Chosen, where, you know, I think they said it takes about 4 episodes before, you know, people get really guaranteed
exactly
to finish it. So
All right, so the website is studio316.com. Go there, give it a shot, give it a few episodes, get into the rhythm of it. Rob Reynolds, thank you so much. Coming up next, The Cale Clark Show. I'm Ed Morrissey saying have a great weekend.